Welcome to the Monitor Daily Podcast. It's Monday, November 15th. Thanks for joining us. I'm Clay Collins.
And I'm Ashley Listenby.
Monitor journalists get to do a lot of listening. We take in all that we can. Then the work is about gathering perspectives and layering context, telling stories accurately and with compassion. Readers and listeners can also find opportunities to hear stories straight from sources. Here's one. Today, we're launching the 8-part audio series that I previewed in this space last month while outlining our latest forays into audio. People Making a Difference has been a Monitor staple since our print newspaper days. Our new effort is a highly listenable extension of that popular franchise. It's a podcast hosted by Dave Scott, our engagement editor. Dave goes deep with difference makers, allowing them to describe their epiphanies and origin stories, to unspool anecdotes, to open up about triumphs and tripwires, and the joy of having agency. In some cases, these interviews are deeply supplemental to Monitor stories you might already have read. Others are fresh introductions. We really hope this opens a new window for readers, Dave says. We hope it gives them the opportunity to hear what we are privileged to hear and to be moved by the power of hearing directly from an inspiring individual. In today's episode, we take you back to Madison, Wisconsin, where a difference maker we first wrote about in June uses old sewing machines to mend lives worldwide. Her work has unfolded in a magnificent way. It highlights empathy and generosity. Immerse yourself in our full 8-part season, and you'll be taken as far as Uganda, where a returning son has built a city around services. Happy listening. Now to today's stories. Our first story. Our writer carves off a key piece of the sprawling story of U.S. infrastructure. Will the president's signature bill spur the regional compromise and cooperation needed to finally advance big projects?
15 years ago, South Carolina State Senator Tom Davis had an epiphany. He realized that a massive pile of river dredge in a crook of the Savannah River could become a cornerstone of the state's economy. A $5 billion project called the Jasper Ocean Terminal was born. And then it stalled, mired in bureaucracy and regional competition. Now, with kinks in the supply chain that have shipping containers stacked like Legos at U.S. ports, the Jasper Ocean Terminal may move forward if neighbors Georgia and South Carolina can cooperate. On Monday, President Joe Biden signed a $1.2 trillion infrastructure bill designed to unlock supply chain capacity and bring jobs to places like Jasper County, one of South Carolina's poorest. It is a promise of short and long-term investments, experts say, hewn in steel and welding rods, bulldozers, and routers. But Mr. Biden's ambitious outlook also tugs at deeper American questions, including the country's capacity to think, dream, and do big. It won't be easy in today's toxic political climate. Whether federal dollars can help break planning logjams, infrastructure experts say, will be a longer-term test of a new direction for American priorities. Why do we need infrastructure is a fundamental question we should be asking, says Manish Shirgokar of the University of Colorado, Denver. The story was reported by Patrick Johnson in Garden City, Georgia, and Hardeeville, South Carolina, for The Monitor.
The results of COP26 were underwhelming, reflecting the difficulties the world faces today when nations are called upon to pull together. Still, there were momentum boosters on the sidelines.
The COP26 climate summit that ended over the weekend will likely be remembered for its setbacks as much as for its successes in charting humanity's course to avert catastrophic planetary warming later this century. The negotiations yielded little that moved the world on from the landmark 2015 Paris Agreement. This weekend's Glasgow Agreement called on governments to set more ambitious targets for decarbonizing their economies next year. But on the sidelines of the conference, governments, businesses, and banks did launch a flurry of green initiatives to cut emissions of methane, for example, combat deforestation, and focus investments more on climate-friendly projects. Those sorts of pledges can boost momentum, says Harjeet Singh of the Climate Action Network, even though he feels that COP26 failed to respond to the urgency of acting on climate change. United Nations Chief Antonio Guterres was disappointed with the summit's results, too. In the end, he said, they simply reflected the interests, the contradictions, and the state of political will in the world today. This story was reported by Simon Motlake in Glasgow, Scotland, for The Monitor.
Hard work is a pillar of China's value system, but youths there are now questioning the premium put on industriousness and rethinking, in a nuanced way, how success is defined.
Competition in China is so legendary, it has a name. China's 996 work culture refers to the expectation that employees work from 9 a.m. to 9 p.m. 6 days a week. But in recent months, resistance to China's ultra-competitive culture has surged among young people across social media, centered around online calls for people to lie flat or tang ping and do the minimum. The phenomenon has caught the attention of Chinese leader Xi Jinping, who has moved aggressively in recent months to lessen the pressures on young people by limiting homework, banning for-profit cram schools, bolstering worker protections, and curbing runaway housing prices. But the pushback may be deeper than any simple policy can address. Increasingly, burned-out millennials are questioning why they are living the way they do, experts say. Siyong Biyao, professor of social anthropology at the University of Oxford, says people know this is not what life is about, and yet they cannot find a way out. This story was reported by Anne Scott Tyson for The Monitor.
Matching parents with childcare is an idea that some groups serving the trades are using to woo women to their ranks. Advocates wonder if that approach could also work for other U.S. industries facing labor shortages.
Brianna Crusoe, a mother from D'Iberville, Mississippi, set her sights on being an electrician after a union leader visited the Women in Construction initiative she was attending. The program offered her childcare for 6 months while she trained and entered the profession. They know how it is a struggle to have a child and work without childcare, she says, about women in construction, which she graduated from in 2018. She's now an electrical apprentice who appreciates having a 401k and health insurance. As employers try to get a grasp on labor shortages, childcare is an important piece of the puzzle. Within the skilled trades, open jobs and an aging workforce have prompted some groups, pre-pandemic and now, to focus on recruiting women and assisting with childcare. Organizers say such initiatives are vital, but difficult and expensive to run. They welcome federal assistance if the Biden administration's Build Back Better provisions are passed. But even without that funding, the growing emphasis on childcare suggests that the trades, like other industries, are trying to fill open jobs by wooing and supporting workers who are parents. I love what I do, says Ms. Caruso. It feels good to tell someone I have the experience to fix electricity. This story was reported by Chelsea Sheasley for The Monitor.
Many people worry about the wildlife squeezed out by urbanization. Lisa Bates lets her love for all animals, from bunnies to javelinas, guide her daily work.
Most people have never heard of a javelina, but for Lisa Bates, the beloved boar-like animal that calls Arizona home is a familiar friend, as are the 5,000 or so animals a year that come through the doors of her Tucson Wildlife Center. Jackrabbits, bats, hawks, and coyotes all call it home temporarily, while their wounds, often a result of coming into contact with humans or our speeding cars, are tended to. In the world of wildlife conservation, there is a regular debate about how much humans should interfere, whether nature should be left to simply take its course. The problem with this idea, Ms. Bates says, is that it assumes a natural ecosystem, a place where humans haven't squeezed animals' habitats, where we don't drive cars across hunting ranges, where we don't put toxins on the land and excessive carbon in the air. Tucson is a real-life lesson in human expansion creeping into natural environments and the collision that brings. In a pristine environment, maybe she could turn away from an injured owl or bunny. Maybe. But that's not what we have, she says. We have a land and ecosystem dramatically changed by humans. So humans need to help. It's our nature to save a baby, she says, javelinas included. This story was reported by Stephanie Haynes in Tucson, Arizona, for The Monitor.
Now, commentary from The Monitor's editorial board on a win for clean governance in Europe. Europe's decades-long project to unite the continent on both shared commerce and shared values took a big leap Sunday. In Bulgaria, which is the European Union's poorest and most corrupt member state, a new political party focused solely on ending official graft won the most votes in a parliamentary election. The results were a success for the thousands of civic-minded protesters who rose up last year to demand clean governance in the Black Sea nation above all else. Whether you are right or left is not important. What is important is integrity, said Kirill Petkov, co-founder of the We Continue the Change party before the election. We are here to work with honest people, whatever their political bias. The election also revealed the depth of the civic awakening among Bulgarians. Mr. Petkov formed his party only in September, just weeks before the election. With little of the usual party apparatus, it won about 26% of the vote, or enough to give it the lead in forming a coalition with smaller parties that oppose corruption. The EU project of instilling values such as transparency and honesty in governance remains on track. That's a wrap for the news. You can find the full-length versions of these stories in today's issue or at csmonitor.com/daily. Thanks for starting your week with us. U.S. President Joe Biden and Chinese leader Xi Jinping meet virtually tonight, and tomorrow we'll look at whether or not that might mark the beginning of the end of the downward spiral in U.S.-China relations. Today's Christian Science Spiritual Perspective contributor shares how, no matter one's age, childlike freedom and joyful activity are always within reach. You can find the column in today's issue or at csmonitor.com/daily. We want to give a quick thanks to our staff, including today's audio production team, Jeff Turton and Erica Page.
This podcast is produced by the Christian Science Monitor. Copyright 2021.